Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Get all the latest football headlines and bite-sized opinion in the brand new Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Join Mark Smith, Martin Grutten, and a conveyor belt of guests as they dissect all the biggest stories in one small, perfectly formed package. Take 5 to 10 minutes out of your day to stay up to date with everything that matters in football. Whether it's a big result from the night before, a new excuse from Jurgen Klopp, a shocker of a VAR decision, or a new chapter in the ongoing Man United soap opera, we will cover it. All the latest news, every weekday lunchtime, on the Whistleblowers Daily Podcast. Look for The Whistleblowers wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Man City Show. It's Nigel Rothman back in the chair. So no Haaland at the weekend. And despite Leicester playing with a back 10 for most of the game, City still managed a 1-0 victory and another 3 points, thanks to a wonder strike from, can we say, the best midfielder in the world, Kevin De Bruyne? We might cover that. How did Alvarez do? What about Edison's save? He's not just in the team for his distribution then. We look forward to our dead rubber against Seville on Wednesday and then look forward to Saturday as well. 3 o'clock kickoff at the Etihad against Fulham. To do all that and much more, I have three guests. Welcome to John Stapleton. Hi, John.
Hi, fella. How are you?
Good to see you. Welcome to Stuart Brodkin. Hi, Stu. Hi. And also to Edward Timpson. Hi, Edward.
Hi, Nigel.
Listen, let's kick off. We actually had a question put in by our good friend Stato Paul Demby. Great question. If Leicester had taken, John, the approach they showed in the last 15 minutes earlier in the game, they may have won it. Others could say that actually might have opened up for City. So which side do you take on that? But it's a great question from Stato.
It's a great question, and both are possible, aren't they? I mean, I thought Leicester defended stoically. I mean, you're quite right, 10 men behind the ball, but they did extremely well and they thwarted City for much of the game. And then when they eventually came out to play after we went 1-0 down, they looked quite dangerous, quite frankly, and I thought we were a bit pushed. So it could have gone either way. Had they played like that from the start, you like to think that City would have overwhelmed them. There's no guarantee, and don't forget Vardy has a terrific record against Manchester City, and there's arguably no reason why he wouldn't maintain that or enhance that at the weekend. But, I thought overall, it was a very good performance by City. We managed the game well. We could pursue this a little bit later, but I thought at times it got boring. And I've got a couple of thoughts as to why it may not have been so boring had City played slightly differently. But for the time being, to answer your direct question, yes, I think both points raised by Stato are distinct or could have been distinct possibilities. We could have overwhelmed, and equally well, they could have beaten us.
And we have seen it, Edward, haven't we, in the past, where teams do try and play a bit more of an expansive game and get overrun by City as a result.
Yeah, and that was clearly playing on the minds of Brendan Rodgers. I mean, you have to remember they came off the back of a 4-0 away win at Wolves, so they were scoring goals for fun, and I think before then, I think they'd won their previous game. So they're on a decent run, but it was a clear tactical decision to do, I'm calling it the three C's, compact, contain and counter. And when we've lost to Leicester, I think at the Etihad a few seasons ago, that's exactly what they did. They got a couple of goals on the counter. It worked. And if they'd played like that throughout, maybe they would have got another counter towards the end. But they really played up until the 70th minute and then decided, if we're still in the game, we've got 20 minutes to go, then we'll throw a bit more caution to the wind. So up until then, yes, they played well at just making sure that we were pushed out wide. We didn't have Haaland in the middle. Alvarez is about 3 foot shorter than Haaland, which makes it more difficult for him to head the ball. And although we had Stones coming into midfield as a sort of inverted right back to give us a bit more, a few more bodies there, which meant Rodri, who is fairly tall, got into the box and had a few good runs. They were able to deal with it quite successfully, and it really took a bit of magic from KDB to break them. So, yes, it could have been a different game if Leicester had played to some of their other strengths that they've got. They're very fast up front. They can attack quickly, but we just about edged it in the parts of the game that we needed to. And you know, I think are actually in the context of the season a really big 3 points.
Stuart, there was a great picture I saw on social media with literally a bank of five at the back, just on the edge of the penalty area, and about 4 inches in front of them, another bank of five, which probably was kind of how they set up, and understandably so. Would you say that was kind of understandable from Roger?
I think to play at home in that way is a bit shameful, to be honest. I think the fans of Leicester City probably felt a bit short-changed. Brighton played quite expansively at the Etihad the other day and did well, looked good, and they followed that up with a win against Chelsea the other day. I think, you know, I don't think you can win a game in the last 15 minutes, really. You're going to have, against City, you don't get too many chances. So how many chances did Rodgers expect to get in the last 15 minutes? A hatful? Not really. You know, I think teams at home should be a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more attractive to their own fans. I know they're struggling, and although, as Edward said, they were on a good run. I think they'd won the last four, or done well in the last four anyway. No, I was a bit shocked by their approach, to be honest. But we have to expect that. I don't think they could have done. And people say, well, they might have won had they come out, you know, from minute one. But they were never going to do that. And teams are scared of us. But should they be that scared? Why aren't they playing football against us? Why don't they let us actually? Why don't they actually come out a bit? Okay, it would help us. But overall, I think I was a bit upset by that. Not upset, but a bit. I thought they didn't really do themselves justice, to be honest. And we did just enough to win. And that 1-0 could be a very, very important 3 points.
Sure. I think, from my point of view, I think you can understand why they did it. I think we've covered the points. Edward, you talked about the 2'7" Alvarez in your introductory words. I think it's only right. Obviously, Haaland hasn't missed many minutes for City. He's obviously not needed at the World Cup, so I'm sure Pep's going to play him when he's fit in pretty much all the games. So it gave Alvarez a bit of a chance. Obviously, totally different player, different physique, different type of centre-forward. How would you assess his performance at the weekend?
Well, I mean, I temper what I say from my previous comments, where I was lauding him as this, you know, really quite incredible find. And I still, to a certain extent, stand by that. It's still very early days. It probably wasn't the right game for him to show his full repertoire with Leicester just sitting everyone behind the ball, giving him no space, lots of crosses coming in, which probably I think we can all agree isn't his strength. But also thought, you know, if you looked at him running off the ball, he was, you know, trying to find some space. He was prowling around, some nice touches. He had one effort where he managed to cut through, and the goal he saved at a reasonably tight angle. So I'm not too worried that he's suddenly become a diminutive figure, not just in terms of stature, but in terms of his footballing ability. I think there's a huge amount to work on. Maybe a few cup games where he's got some more license, some more freedom, we can see him at his best. And actually, when he's been on as a substitute at the Etihad, we've seen him score some spectacular goals. He's got a great turn of pace. I like his attitude. So he's not Haaland. We have to admit that. Haaland scored almost half of all our goals this season against the whole team. And that's something that we need to be careful about, that we don't become over-reliant on him. But I suppose in some ways it's to be expected if he's in the team. But I don't think Alvarez has anything to worry about in terms of his potential for the team. He just now has to realise it. It may be one of those seasons where he's in and out of the team, a bit like Foden in his first season. And next season will be his big breakthrough. But certainly, I still think we've got a lot more to see from him.
Not easy boots to fill, are they, Haaland's? I suppose, John, it's fair to say. Poor lad. Everybody going to... It's an obvious comparison to make, isn't it?
Yeah, it's impossible for the lad. And let's not forget he's only, what, 19 years old, 20 years old? I can't remember. But I thought he worked very hard. The chance that Edward talked about, I think, might have been ruled offside at the end of the day. But, you know, he was in there. He didn't get fantastic service. One of the things that I alluded to a little bit earlier, I was going to raise was this. I don't quite understand when we play teams like Leicester, who put 10 men behind the ball, why we don't use the byline more, why we don't use the flanks more to go down to the byline and cross the ball back. Kevin De Bruyne is a pass master at that, you know. But every time Grealish or Cancelo get the ball, they come down the left and they cut inside and just hit a wall. Now, I'm quite happy to be condemned of being very naive when I say this, but why don't we use the flanks more? Why don't we go to the byline more to cross the ball back low and hard, as De Bruyne can do so well, and Bernardo does very effectively as well. A point I raised, because I think someone like Alvarez would benefit from that. He didn't really get that many chances in the game against Leicester, possibly for the reasons outlined. But discuss, friends.
Yeah, indeed. Stuart, answer for John's question. Any thoughts on what he's saying?
I think it's a very difficult game to judge him on. I think he's got quality. I think he's got pace, like Edward says. He'll come good. It's, I think, a typical first season under Pep. We've seen that so many times in the past. He's all right. He's got quality. I would say that. We don't buy players without quality. He will score goals for us. And I think Pep stated the other day that whenever Haaland is out, he'll be in. So he will get chances. Haaland won't stay fit for every game. And, he'll score goals.
Stuart, let's stick with you and come to another person who gets plenty of column inches as well for all the reasons we will understand. Jack Grealish, big price tag. Seemed to have a bit more of a freer role, maybe. Did that suit him a bit? Did you see signs of him having an influence on the game? Clearly won the free kick that De Bruyne scored from, which we'll come on to shortly. So your views on Grealish and how he settled in, and is he open to some criticism, or should we get off the lad's back and give him a chance?
Sorry, he's settling in. He's been much better in the last four or five games. He's not just getting rid of the ball straight away. That's what Pep told him, you know, just pass the ball. But now he's sort of cutting in and getting into the box. He didn't score many goals at Villa, to be fair, and he's not scored many goals for us either. But I think he's a provider, and he's a free kick winner. And I think that, does that count as an assist? I think it does. The KDB goal, is that correct?
Well, I think it should. It's a thought I had as well. I don't actually know the answer to the question. Sure, I'm guessing it must do, because if every goal has an assist, well, who else are you going to give it to? Yeah, it's got to be him, surely.
No, I think he'll come good again. A bit Alvarez. Like, of course, he's in his second season now. I don't think that the price tag is not his fault. I think we've said this many times before. Watch this space. I'm sure I really rate him as a player. Whenever we played Villa, I was scared of him whenever he got the ball. So I'm sure he can do good things for us.
We've talked about it before, Edward. I'm sure we'll talk about it again. Your thoughts on Grealish? You've not been on for a couple of weeks, so anything changed in your mind?
I think he is. We're seeing some signs of him settling in. He's winning more fouls again, which suggests that he's taking on more players rather than just going back to the defence with a pass. I think his link play is improving, which means maybe his understanding with other players and within the team and what Pep's asking him to do within the structure is starting to sink in. Sometimes I quite like him to appear somewhere else on the pitch rather than just stuck out on the left. And remember when we had Sane and Sterling, and maybe during the game they might just swap over every so often just to upset the opposition. Because if you just have the same person attacking you, you get to know their little tricks and ways that they try and beat you. So occasionally, why don't we just pop him over on the right for 10 minutes, see what happens? And that, because that freedom, I think you talk about, Nigel, is important. At Villa, he had, you know, he could basically go wherever he wanted at any time of the of the game. It's a little bit more restricted at City, but maybe just trying him out in different parts of the pitch, we could see another side to him. I don't think his goal scoring is ever going to be one of his highest attributes for the team. Him winning fouls in really dangerous places. He's starting to show how that's really important. But of course, you still need someone like KDB to put away those opportunities. So signs that he's starting to understand the Pep way. I think there's more that he can still contribute, and maybe just try him in places that people wouldn't expect to find him on the pitch, and exploit some of the other weaknesses that we see against teams out on their left rather than always out on their right.
Right, John, what would you like to add to the Grealish conversation?
Well, you know, I've never been his greatest fan, although I do admit, as both Stuart and Edward have said, he's played a lot better in the last three or four games, that's for sure. He's made an impact. In the past, I've just come away from games thinking, well, you know, what's he for, almost, you know, with one or two exceptions, you know, what's the point of Grealish? Why do we pay all that money for the guy? And, you know, he has had a long time to settle in. But I think he is showing signs now. I hate to be completely... I don't want to be totally negative about the guy. He's obviously got huge talent. He does win a lot of free kicks, as has been said. He excites the crowd. And I think he probably spurs on the team when he gets the ball, because he's capable of a bit of magic, that's for sure. All credit to him for his performance at the weekend. I thought he played well. And he's certainly a very useful guy to have around. Whether I'd play him every week, I'm not quite sure. I think it's a very interesting point that Edward raised about maybe try him somewhere else, just even for 10 or 15 minutes, just to, you know, shake the trees a bit. I think good idea, very good idea.
All right, I'm going to shake some trees in a second. We're going to have a quick break. When we come back, we're going to touch on Laporte. We're going to talk then about the two main characters, I think, Ederson and KDB. And we'll do both of those things just after this break.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back. Let's just touch on Laporte. And I think, Edward, it's fair to say, I had him as man of the match in the last home game, and I thought he was superb again at the weekend as well. So really good to see him back and firing on all cylinders and a real rock at the back there.
They're completely right. To remember a few seasons ago when we brought him in, probably about four or five seasons ago, they fly by so quickly these days. But he, I think it was a January transfer window by, tell me if I'm wrong, but when we're desperately short of decent centre-backs, we're now probably got the sort of luxury of them. We've got Laporte, Akanji, Ake, Diaz, Stones, as well as some of the academy players coming through. So to still have him at the club, because there was a talk at some stage that when he lost his place, he might want to go off and find first-team football somewhere else in the Champions League team. To have him back playing, I think, at the highest level that we've seen him play. His reading of the game is excellent when the ball comes over his head, which is often the way people try to beat our back four. He always seems to be in the right place, control the ball well, play it back to Ederson. He's got a great pass. He sees through sometimes forward towards the midfield, even to straight to the forwards. And he's normally fairly strong in the tackle. Occasionally he's been found wanting, but... No, to have him as a rock, having off the back of having Diaz winning Player of the Year, we can't really complain that the purchasing power of those who hold the purse strings at City haven't come up with some absolutely fantastic players. And if we can now stay injury free for the rest of the season, I assume is he in the Spanish squad? But let's say he comes back from the World Cup, if he's going in one piece, because we're going to need him for the rest of the season, irrespective of the fact that we've got quite a few other options should he fall foul of his knee injury that he has in the past. But I agree with you. I think he's playing. The fact that he doesn't really get a mention on Match of the Day suggests that, unlike Van Dijk or two of the others who are supposed to be the best centre backs in the country, I think he's probably playing as good as anybody.
High praise, Stuart, for Laporte. Do you want to join in the accolade?
Absolutely, yeah. It was a January transfer, 2018, $57 million. I'd almost forgotten about him when he was out injured and thought, well, we don't really need him. But the way he's been sort of organising things in the last few games, he is, like Edward says, he's a rock. And he quietly goes about his business. He does make the odd mistake. All defenders make mistakes at times. But he doesn't make that many, and he's a very reliable player in that position, and I really like him, and long may he continue.
John, you're going to kick off with Ederson and that save. Before you do that, do you want to just add anything about the Laporte situation?
Well, I think, as Edward was saying, we have an embarrassment of riches, don't we? I think Laporte's played magnificently. And to, also, someone else who's come on in a major way, in my view, is Ake. You know, versatile guy, can play left back, can play centre back as well. Very impressive season so far. Every time he's had the opportunity, John Stones played well as well. And of course, we've got Ruben Dias there. We're very, very fortunate indeed. As for Ederson, well, that was some save. I mean, breathtaking, wasn't it? Absolutely breathtaking. And, you know, following on from that kick the previous week, which enabled the Viking to score so effectively. What a player to have, as you say, not just a shot stopper, not just a kicker. I mean, a man capable of the most amazing athletic saves. I was out of this world because I thought, you know, it would have been like the old days, typical City, one up and then 2 minutes later, one all. It could have been so easily one all. Yeah, fantastic save. Particularly bearing in mind for a goalkeeper who not had that much to do, doesn't have much to do at all in most games. And to respond in that way when something like that does happen, is quite remarkable, really. We're very lucky.
I think that's the point, isn't it? It's a huge concentration required because you just don't know. And I've been a critic of his, as you will know, those that listen to the podcast regularly. I've been twice a season, I think, I kind of ask the question, is he only in for his distribution, if we sometimes can be critical about him stopping those shots? But Edward, that was something special, I think, wasn't it?
It was, and at that moment in the game, absolutely crucial. And just the reaction time, I mean, it was Tielemans, I think, was it who hit it?
Yeah.
And the speed and the true hit that he gave it gave Ederson very little time to adjust and do the tip onto the bar, which was needed. I mean, it was going in. There's no doubt about that. And so I'm one who sometimes thought maybe his shot stopping could be better. Some things where he just lets it go under his gloves. But that was genuinely a world-class save. I think it demonstrates why he's there, not just for his ability to ping a pass up to, in the old days, Aguero, these days Haaland. He's got a lot more that he has to offer. And he's also a very brave goalkeeper, all the way from the days when he got whacked in the head by Mane, I think it was, who got sent off against Liverpool a few years back. He'll get stuck in, he'll give everything for the team. And in a moment like that, that's the difference that someone of his quality gives. And I'm sure there'll be other keepers who think they could make that save, but I think his reaction time was outstanding.
Anything to add, Stuart?
I think the save was at a very crucial time. I think it was a couple of minutes after we'd gone ahead, and had it been 1-1, it could have been a completely different game. He does have his moments where he loses concentration, which is not surprising, really, when we've got the ball the whole time. And he often gets beaten by the only shot of the game from our opponents. But, you know, I have been a bit critical about him, like you have, Nige, but, you know, overall, he's a great package in terms of, you know, distribution, and Edward's right, bravery. He's a fantastic, you know, he doesn't shirk his, you know, the responsibilities when he has to dive at someone's feet. Overall, I don't really think we could do better.
better than, would you have Ken Mulhern back or Alan Ogley maybe ahead of him? Alan Ogley, you go for him, would you? Okay, fair enough. Or Keith McRae maybe. No disrespect to those three wonderful keepers who the slightly older ones amongst us might remember. John's smiling there, I can see. Listen, let's talk about KDB. And I should have mentioned in my introduction, some people have been saying that he is the best midfielder in the world. Is that fair, John? Can we confidently say that now, that Manchester City are operating with the best midfielder in the world in Kevin De Bruyne?
I would say that most definitely. I can't think of anyone who's better, quite frankly. And he demonstrated that, didn't he, at the weekend. I mean, Pep has been a little bit critical, hasn't he, saying, you know, we need a bit more from Kevin De Bruyne. And then that lovely quote after the match at the weekend when Pep said, I think that you know, we've done everything together apart from sleep with each other, and he's now back to his best, and that free kick demonstrated it very, very effectively. But not just the free kicker, which was sensational, but his play throughout the game was masterclass, absolute masterclass. And we're very fortunate. And every time I look at him, I can't help thinking, yeah. What was Mourinho doing letting this guy go? I just have a nice wry smile to myself because we are the happy beneficiaries of that classic misjudgment by the former Chelsea manager.
And what is it, Edward? What is it that puts him in that category? You know, we can argue whether he is or he isn't, but he's clearly up there, isn't he?
He's definitely up there. And he's now been around long enough to demonstrate he's not just a 1-2-3 season wonder. He just keeps doing it again and again and again. I mean, he's not quite superhuman, because that would mean he'd be electrifying every second of every game. And he does have moments in games when things don't go his way. But I thought he said something really interesting. I think it was after this game. He said, actually, the one thing that I think is important is mistakes. And if he makes a mistake with a pass, he'll then try and make the same pass. Obviously, to try and rectify the mistake. But that's how he's still got an appetite to learn. He still wants to get better. And that's why some of the visions on his passing, where you're sitting watching the match at the Etihad, and he suddenly pings a pass at me, you think, I didn't even see that, and I can see the whole game. He's on the pitch, is something that is very special and very few people are capable of, let alone doing it on a pretty regular basis. And don't forget, he has been in the City team long enough now to have a wholesale change of players around him. It's not that he's been able to just sit and find the same people, get into a pattern of play. He's had to adapt constantly to what Pep's asked him to do, different positions, different styles of play, Haaland being the latest one. And clearly he has the ability and the footballing brain to carry that off, irrespective of which players he has around him. He should be, if it's not Haaland winning the player of the season, as I know we're only in the end of October, but if he continues in the same vein, I think he's on 11 assists already this season, then he's going to have to be up there again, because we're just so fortunate to have him at the club. Thank God Mourinho decided that Chelsea had too many good players for him to stay in the team.
In terms of player of the season, he may have some competition in some tall blonde bloke who needs a haircut. Stuart, your thoughts on KDB?
I think he's just about approaching his prime, to be honest. I know he's 31 now, I think. I think he's the best player in that position in the world. I think he's got tremendous sort of second sight. You know, he plays, he looks for the next move, not the move he's on. You know, he's just ahead of the game the whole time. And sometimes, you know, when he was playing with Jesus or Sterling, he was a bit frustrated that they weren't moving or had the same thoughts that he had. But I think, you know, with Foden and with Haaland and with a few other players, he's got players around him now that don't know exactly what he's going to do, but have got a good idea. I think it's a marvel to watch him. We should be very, very, very privileged to be seeing him in a City shirt. And he's no trouble at all. You know, he's on or off the field. A true star.
Absolutely. Before we move on, I just want to sort of stop and talk. Those of you who listen regularly will know I'm fascinated by kits. And I think kits that they're important. They're an identity. They're your football club and the colours you play in. And we'll all have a view on the different types of kits. And those who listened last week, I was listening to Jim Proudfoot, his commentary midweek on Talk Sport, and he talked about us playing in laser blue, and he responded very nicely to a tweet I sent in correcting him. And during the second half, he referred to us as sky blue, very pointedly. So thank you, Jim, for that. It reminded me, there were a few bits of news about the kit this week. We heard, for example, the women have decided very pragmatically and sensibly to give them more confidence during their periods to move from white shorts, which is probably the most impractical colour to wear maroon shorts, which seems a sensible and been sort of well received and accepted around the world as being a great decision. And that prompted people talking about, well, should the men's team wear maroon shorts? And alongside that, I just thinking of the Jim Proudfoot comment, any thought of City moving away from sky blue to maybe even going back to laser blue was something that I would fight with all my heart, because I am old-fashioned, looking around who we've got on the show. Edward aside, I think we've got, you know, a few more grey hairs between us three, and been watching for City over 150 years between us. So I don't know, what do you feel as strongly as I do? John, what's your view on this? I'm coming for, we've got to be sky blue and white.
I'm more old-fashioned than you, Nigel. You know,
amazing. Bring it on, John. Share your thoughts.
Manchester City should play in sky blue and white. Football matches should kick off at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. And the FA Cup draw should be on the BBC radio at 1 o'clock on Monday lunchtime. End of story.
And we should still be doing the classified football results at 5 o'clock on Sports Report as well, just to add that one in for you, my friend.
Precisely, yeah.
Yeah, go on.
The Bumblebee outfit, I think, is a bit of fun, but I'm not that wild about it. It's either sky blue and white, or at a push, the red and black stripes, which remind me of the cup final.
Exactly. I'm going to come to Edward at the end, because he's far too young to even remember the 1969 Cup final. It was just a twinkle in Sir John's eye, I guess, at the time. Stuart, are you like me? Please don't go to laser blue. Stick with sky blue and white. Are you there?
100% with John. Sky blue, white shorts. Full stop.
Edward, I'm hoping you're going to be slightly less kind of feels as strongly as we do. Maybe you don't. I don't know. What's your view of sky blue and white? Would you be happy to go to maroon shorts and laser blue and all sorts of trial other things with our first team kit? Or is it sacrosanct?
Well, I'm quite nostalgic for the sort of the mid-80s when I was been going to City for probably about 6 or 7 years. And I remember we were sponsored by Philips. I remember we had David Phillips, who played for us. And he was a poster up on my bedroom. Because, you know, I was sad like that. And that was, I seem to remember, that was quite a sort of laser blue colour. I'm trying to remember.
I thought the Phillips one was particularly sky blue. I thought it was a particularly light blue. It was more the Sean Gota era. Well, I think it was Brother was the sponsor at the time, which was kind of that laser blue period.
No, that was revolting. despite the fact that Sean scored quite a few goals wearing it. It was going through a phase when they were really baggy as well, weren't they? So they sort of hung really quite unattractively off all the players. So no, it has to be sky blue. I've now got visions of sort of, you know, Tommy Caton and, you know, sort of leaping majestically in his sky blue. No, it's got to be sky blue. On the shorts, actually, in some ways, I absolutely laud the women's team for what they've done, because so often these days we know that kits are being decided for commercial reasons. That's why we have a third kit, and why so often we play away from home. We think, why are we wearing that horrific yellow and black bumblebee colour shirt again? Why aren't we wearing sky blue? So in some ways, I would like to see that sort of return to what the fans feel best represents their team, to be the predominant force in that decision making. I suspect I'm foolish in thinking that, but I very much hope that we stick to sky blue next season, and the season after that, and every other season in the future.
Let us know what you think on Twitter. As you know, we're at City Podcast. Please, no laser blue. Keep it sky blue and white. Thank you. John, let's just finish off with looking forward to a couple of games. And we've got a dead rubber coming up against Seville this week. Who gets rested? Who gets a bit of a run in the team? Any thoughts on that?
Well, hopefully give the kids a good run out, won't it? I mean, you know, virtually a reserve team. I mean, it's a wonderful opportunity to see what the kids can do. And let's hope we get a decent crowd then, despite the best efforts of Avanti West Coast to stop people going to Manchester. I had to get that in there, because I can't resist a single moment of potential criticism for that shambolic outfit. Yeah, let's hope they get a decent crowd there. Let's hope the kids get a chance against Sevilla. I keep calling them Sevilla. Everyone else calls them Sevilla. But yeah, good opportunity for a reserve goalkeeper. A young Palmer to have a go, the young fullback who's done so well for us. Yeah, all of those guys. And rest as many as we can because the outcome is insignificant.
Stuart, play anybody, give anybody a bit of a run, give them a chance. I think we'd all agree with what John said. Would you stick anybody in to give them another 90 minutes or 70 minutes, whatever?
I think it'll be our reserves against their reserves. Both teams are through, both it's the deadest of dead rubbers. They're in the Europa League, we're through in the Champions League. So I'd like to see Ortega, he will play, obviously. He had a good game in Copenhagen, I think. And I'd like to see a bit more of Cole Palmer.
Yeah.
Rate him. Look forward to seeing him. It'll be, you know, two reserve sides probably all up, more or less.
But two reserve sides, Edward, probably about right, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're already going to finish top, whatever happens. So with, you know, games coming thick and fast before the World Cup break, we've got four in the next few weeks. It's a chance to rest the key players. I thought Ortega, as Stuart said, I thought Ortega when he played was really quite impressive. Another good example of great scouting from the club. So he will definitely get another run out. But yeah, it's I think we beat them 4-0 last time. Whatever happens, it can't be any duller than the last Champions League game we played. So let's hope we get a few goals.
Stuart, Fulham up to seventh. Play them at the Etihad, 3 o'clock. John, 3 o'clock, Saturday, yeah. Etihad, 3 o'clock kickoff.
Thank God for that. Pity we can't get there because of bloody Avanti.
Yeah. Anybody who follows John on Twitter, I think it's at John Stapleton TV, you will get a full rundown of Avanti West Coast on almost a daily basis. You can understand how they're doing. Stick with John on Twitter. So Stuart.
They're playing well. Mitrovic is scoring loads of goals. He'd probably be top scorer, wouldn't he, without Haaland, isn't he? In the competition. They're playing with a bit of freedom as well for them, but I think away from home, we should be okay.
We should be okay, John. 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock. Yeah. Sky blue and white. We'll be playing sky blue and white. Three o'clock.
Yeah. Done deal.
Done deal.
All over. No, I mean, Fulham have done quite well. That's not, you know, they're not that far off. I think seventh, you should say. Not far behind the top four. Surprisingly well, actually. Mitrovic is a threat. It'll be a challenge. They're a good little team, got a good manager who's had his ups and downs, but he's coming good at the moment. Yeah, it'll be a challenge, but I don't really see any problem for City. I think I'd say 3-0.
The final word is with you, Edward, before we go on Fulham visiting the Etihad on Saturday. Your thoughts ahead of that game?
3 o'clock, isn't it?
3 o'clock Saturday, yeah.
3 o'clock Saturday.
Sports Report, 5 o'clock, yeah. Yeah, Avanti West Coast, still a pile of poo, but there you go. That's
both of us right.
Well, I mean, you know, Fulham are a better outfit than we've seen when they've been yo-yoing between the two divisions for a while. Hopefully Haaland will be playing, which will make a big difference. I mean, it's worth just looking. We've got Fulham and Brentford at home, whilst Arsenal have got Chelsea away and Wolves away. So these are a couple of games that I think are going to potentially define the season and give us a chance to get a bit of breathing space between us and Arsenal. So we have to get a couple of home wins. They've got to be bankers. And I think that will start with Fulham on Saturday. At 3 o'clock.
Excellent. Listen, I'm off to get my football pink. Huge thanks to my three guests, to John Stapleton, to Stuart Brodkin, and to Edward Tinson. This is Nigel Rothband saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you all very soon.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.